Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
The Leicester board have had more stick on Twitter than JMO and you, Slotty.
Hello and welcome to the latest edition of The Ruck, the rugby podcast from The Times and Sunday Times. I'm Owen Slott, chief rugby correspondent of The Times. Like you, no doubt, emotionally knackered, physically destroyed at the end of a sensational Six Nations Championship. But while the championships stop, podcasts never end. And here we are with just a huge amount to talk about. Did England flatter against Scotland to deceive overall? The artist, formerly known as The Unbeaten Eddie, should we blame him as he instructed us? Was this actually the closest, most competitive championship in recent memory? And are you anywhere nearer than I am to identifying a Lions test hooker? Please subscribe on iTunes. You can also join the conversation by leaving your reviews. And I am joined this week by, off the early morning train from Swansea, the man possibly to rise highest above the weekly hysteria in Wales, Steve James. Good to see you, Steve.
Good to see you all.
We also have the man who is closest to Mike Brearley. Sorry, the man who is closest to Dylan Hartley, the England captain. Johnny Fordham, rugby correspondent of The Sun, is back again. Good to see you, Johnny.
Thank you very much, guys.
And, of course, our regular luminary, oracle and lifelong campaigner for bonus points, Steve Jones.
Very good.
Let's start with an overview of the tournament just passed. You wouldn't get much of a highlights reel from the weekend, but that's not necessarily what it's all about. A more captivating weekend of games you'd struggle to find. Obviously, I'm excluding anything involving Italy here, which is sad, but no explanation required. Now, players these days can't get through a weekend without being given a mark out of 10. So, how do you rate the overall championship? I say 8. Johnny?
I'd say knock a mark off 7. For me,
I'd say 8, and in that 8, bonus points had no influence whatsoever on anything.
Agree with Johnny. Actually, yeah, 7. I think it was just too inconsistent, and I'm not sure any of the sides will be particularly happy with how they played. It was competitive and close, but I'm not sure about the overall standard. I know people got excited about that, but I'm not convinced by that.
I think the last weekend was a bit of a reality check, wasn't it? I mean, the France-Wales game was brilliant in the closeness of the contest, but
it's brilliant after 80 minutes, you mean?
Yeah. Dramatic is what I'm saying, but
Going back to your point you mentioned in the intro, I think people got too excited about the England-Scotland game.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right.
I thought Scotland were absolutely abysmal in that game. I mean, I think they had some misfortune, but I thought they totally bottled that game. I thought England were good, but Scotland were hopeless.
England's point of view, across the board, the Scotland game was the exception rather than rule, wasn't it? Mm.
Yeah.
No, I'm sorry, I disagree. I've sat there for 13 years watching rubbish rugby, and as Clive Woodward said, they never dragged you to the edge of your seat. Well, this time they did against Scotland, and I thought actually Scotland are now trying to rewrite history, and now, because they beat Italy, it's now become a good season. Well, it is never a good season while you lose, if you lose by 60. Yeah. And Scotland's competitiveness against the other teams suggests to me that England blew them away, and it was England's excellence as well as Scotland's weaknesses. But the other thing is, in terms of class and all that sort of thing, you'd be a little bit careful. It was the best. Teams who were down came back and beat. The results were never certain. And also on Sunday, you watch that game again, sorry, on Saturday's game in Dublin, you watch that again in a year's time on video or in your, on your own with a glass of Lucozade, and you'll think, God, that was absolutely dreadful. But if you were there and involved in it and what was at stake, it was magnificent. It was a terrible game of rugby. There was no continuity whatsoever. My goodness, it had something else to it which I'll never forget.
That's the contest side of it, Johnny. Did you think of England just disappointing on Saturday or outplayed by Ireland?
Both. They were flat. They lacked intensity. It was. I think the occasion clearly got to them. Eddie Jones gave it all the big ones during the week. It was he really kind of wrapped up the psychological warfare on his own players by saying this. You know, the kind of level between greatness and failure is minimal, and you know they failed. I think that was just a kind of bridge too far for them after everything that happened. And he kept on kind of, you know, writing these checks and everything. The first one was, oh, yeah, against France, we're going to be daring and attacking rugby. That didn't happen. You know, obviously, Italy, we're going to take him to the cleaners. No, they were completely embarrassed. Ireland, yes, we'll match their intensity. They just fell flat and flat.
It is interesting that we get to the end of an 18-game winning streak, and yet I agree pretty much with what you said. They have been brilliant, and they have... For me, the tour of Australia in the last summer was absolutely where they really had us on the edge of our seats and were brilliant to watch, but I think that for me the Six Nations proved that fantastic though they've been and great though their achievement, that they have that now is the time to move on and do something different.
No, they have to move on, but there's this thing that things happen in a straight line. Not every team, just by being there, gets better. There's no telling. It's not definite that England will get better next year, or that anyone will get worse. And they reached a massive peak in Australia, but you know it is no guarantee that just because Eddie's there longer or someone's a year older that the team will suddenly become good. We might be. We should have maybe savoured Australia and saying this is the best it's going to get. You just never know. So you know things don't happen in a straight line. England could lose a lot of games next year. We don't know.
That defeat wasn't a big shock to me. The way England have been playing in the Six Nations, you know, they could have lost to France, they could have lost to Wales.
Steve, with hindsight, I wish I'd said that before you.
No, but
can we edit that bit around so Slotty goes in first?
I saw it coming.
Yeah, but no, let's be honest, and we all know how hard Grand Slams are to win. For that England side to have won back-to-back Grand Slams would have been quite strange, I think. I think they're a good side, but they're, you know, you compare them to the 03 side, the 91, 92 side, they're not near that level. I don't think. I think there's still the same problems in that team that there were when Stuart Lancaster was there.
That they can't mend problems?
Well, they didn't have a coach.
No.
They couldn't mend problems against Lancaster's day.
No, but I think the flankers are a problem. Seven is still a problem position. James Haskell did brilliantly in Australia, but, I mean, that is still a problem position. They'll be hoping Underhill comes through, I think, this summer. 9-10 when under pressure and on the back foot, they really struggle. Youngs and Ford again struggled so much with that slow ball and being on the back foot again on Saturday. And England needed to win that game, and Eddie Jones took George Ford off, didn't he? He ended up coming back on. But, you know, everyone talks about the two receivers, 10-12. They're brilliant on the front foot. But all of a sudden, when he needs to win the Grand Slam, he takes George Ford off. I thought that was a hugely telling moment.
I thought it was bigger than that, Steve. I mean, he took off 8, 9, 10... and 12. I mean, blimey, obviously at half time they said they've got to drive the ball up. Mm. And but at least they should have given it a chance. They give him 2 minutes, then you take off the spine of your team.
Billy didn't look match fit though, I think.
He didn't. But
they'd rushed him back in there.
Well, they had, but I mean, I don't think that was because Hughes came on. They knew they had Hughes. If Hughes hadn't been there, maybe they couldn't have started Billy. But I just think, blimey, they were disrupted as anything. Then suddenly you've got a winger, centre and whatnot, and it just looked, it was a very, very un-Eddie-like thing. I don't think suddenly they're going badly, then they're going chaotically badly.
I think the scoreline, they were lucky with that scoreline as well. It was only 13-9, actually.
Yeah. It looked worse than that, but that says something about the team, doesn't it? They were outplayed, but were within a try of pulling off what would have been quite an escape. Johnny, what do you think that Dylan would make in retrospect of his championship overall? I mean, he has become a bit of a talking point. Eddie was very clear in his tournament wrap-up that he's still in love with his captain and nothing's going to change.
What would I make of it? I think that he probably thinks that he's had a good tournament. I think on the basis of when he was on the pitch, he was okay, nothing special, but typical Dylan Hartley solid performances, I guess, for the 50 odd minutes or whatever he got, never got over the hour mark. I think that he's clearly got the squad together behind the scenes and kind of instilled this winning mentality, and he's Eddie Jones's man, and you know Eddie Jones has put his arm around him, and kind of, you know, those two are the guys that are driving it all now. So I think that this time next year, I don't think we're going to be talking about him as a starting hooker for England, and whether or not he's even in the squad. Obviously, Eddie Jones took Tommy Taylor as the third man. Well, sorry, the 25th man or 24th man, whatever one he was. So I think that he's obviously going well at Wasps, top of the Premiership table, in another Premiership final, Europe, all that kind of thing. Dylan Hartley can't even get into the Northampton side. So his future, I think, whilst Eddie says it's safe at the moment, I think that's possibly only for the rest of this calendar year.
The comparison with Mike Brealey is great line for the boys this morning, but it's just ridiculous. Or if we were Welsh, we'd be comparing him with Steve James, of course. the Brealey of Welsh cricket.
Who couldn't captain Orbat.
I know there are different types of hooker. I know there are different styles. But you compare the amount of time you actually saw Dylan with the amount of time you saw Girardeau, Rory Best, I thought played well on Saturday, though I'm not his biggest fan, Ken Owens. At least you saw these guys in the game. Now, Dylan may be a great scrummaging hooker, but that you've got to do more than that. And I'm just baffled by the incredible, implacable loyalty.
I don't disagree. He does the basics well, but Jamie George can do the basics well. I mean, hookers should be doing the basics well. Mm. Jamie George can do that. Luke Cowan-Dickey, I don't think, can yet, so he's probably about number four. But Jamie George and Tommy Taylor, you mentioned, Johnny, I think that they're ready to go.
It's going to be fascinating to see what Warren Gatland does with this hooking berth, as you mentioned earlier. I've got an idea who to pick. I mean, Ken Owens was the outstanding hooker in the Six Nations, I think.
I would agree.
He's a little bit smaller, that's the one worry. But I suppose Dane Coles is not a massive man either, is he?
Do you think if you're Warren Gatland, do you take Dylan thinking he could be a really good influence as captain of your midweek team? Or is he the sort of captain, you'd have a better idea on this, Johnny, than anyone else, is he the sort of guy that if you took him to New Zealand and he ended up as captain of the B team and wasn't getting much of a sniff at the A team, that he wouldn't contribute?
I mean, look at his role at Northampton. Actually, he does a lot behind the scenes at Northampton. Like I was just saying, you know, he can't even get in the team, but he does a lot with the squad, and he organises a lot of things with the players and their families and all this kind of stuff. And if you speak to the Northampton owner and chairman, they absolutely love the guy, whereas Jim Mallander and Dorian West probably have differing opinions of him right now because they're not picking him. So I think he would. I think Hartley, you look at it with what Warren Gatland said about going to New Zealand and the fact that the culture and the things that I'll have to do turning up at these events and having to sing and all that kind of stuff. I think having a Kiwi in there could be a good thing for the squad to be able to kind of, you know, let people know what is actually going to be happening. And, you know, he knows the players, he knows the cities, he knows the stadiums, he knows he knows everything about New Zealand. So I think that's going to be a huge thing in his favour.
Slotty, I think it's a good point though about the midweek captain. Sir Ian McGeoghegan always goes on about that, doesn't he, that you need a good midweek captain on a Lions tour.
I don't know Rory Best well enough, but if he was to accept that you're not probably going to challenge for the test team, would he be that right sort of personality?
I don't know, but it's something Gatland's going to have to think about when he's selecting that side.
He is. I think you've got to be a bit careful with that now. Don't forget, in the old days, you'd have a huge game on Saturday, then you played Joe Bloggs' Country Bumpkins in midweek. But actually, it's not. There are difficult games in midweek, which sometimes are more difficult than Saturday games. So you've got to be a bit careful. I mean, the other thing is with Dylan, I agree with Johnny about, you know, he's a Kiwi, he knows it all, but that can actually be really disadvantageous. Because he'll be pilloried from from pillar to post down there. They'll ask him all sorts of stuff about his dirty play and why did he desert. He'll be seen as a deserter. He'll be almost like a lightning rod that Alistair Campbell was in 2005. And that was a lightning rod.
That is quite some statement. On to Wales. So
right.
you look back at the Championship. Wales were 3 minutes and one dodgy kick away from beating England.
Yeah.
They were winning against France until the 99th minute.
Yeah.
You know, they were phenomenally close to coming second in this Championship.
Yeah, they hammered Scotland in the first half as well and then went to pieces in the second half.
Yeah. So does this leave Howley... I mean, some people say, well, it would be a PR disaster if Howley was made the Wales manager, head coach, further down the line when Warren Gatland eventually goes. Is he really that far behind where he started?
Yeah, it's a difficult question. I mean, as ever in Wales, it's hysterical. Knives have been out for Rob Howley for a long time, basically since the first half performance against Australia in the autumn when they had a bit of a catastrophe, didn't they? His record is decent, as you say. They did okay. Look, they haven't attacked well, have they? I think that's the bottom line. They didn't attack well again against France. Their defence has been brilliant. Probably, I don't know about tries conceded, but they were probably the best, weren't they, in the whole tournament? They were certainly the best before last weekend. Whether they concede one there, I mean, you know, under Sean Edwards, the defence is brilliant. They just had that shocker against Scotland. The thing with Howley is, I mean, that decision is not to be made until 2019, and a lot can happen between now and then. Personally, I feel he gets a lot of undue stick, Rob Howley. He did bring in Alex King, didn't he, for the attack this campaign? So he wasn't necessarily solely in charge of the attack of the Welsh team. And then
people who have had a hand in trying to change the way that Wales attack is growing sort of campaign.
I'll tell you my view on it. I think they struggle because they haven't got great ball carriers. They don't get over the gain line like they used to. When England have been at their best, Billy Vinopolo has been smashing over the gain line, and then the other guys will come in behind him. They'll clear people out, and then Ben Youngs and George Ford have got quick ball. You don't often see Wales getting that these days. They got it a bit against England, and that's probably their best performance.
I totally agree with Steve. I think the problem's not in the backs. I mean, people are talking about them backs in the World Cup. Well, they had about 10 of them out. I slightly despair of the fact they've got great players who they're allowing to be mediocre. I mean, you've got Toby Faletau, Luke Chatteris on the bench and you keep them there. I mean, that may be a selection, but it is up to you as a coach to get them at a peak. Now, Toby Faletau and Chatteris are two of the great carriers. Faletau was magnificent in 2013, and I totally agree with Steve. And one of the problems I've got with the Ken Owens in the front row is you compare the number of instances you see Welsh front row forwards carrying the ball, and then you look at Furlong, McGrath, Best, who are on the ball all the time. Yeah. They just do not have enough carriers, and there's no one steaming the ball up. And then, of course, it's all you're all shoveling. What's the word? Shoveling manure behind the screen.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Because you're not on the front foot.
Yeah, Jake Ball played out of his skin against England and did carry well, didn't he? But that was quite a lone instance. Mm. I think Falatel will definitely go on the Lions tour.
I think he'll be on the 23 if he's not starting. I gather rates him very highly.
Yeah.
All right, so overall, Six Nations. Which nation do we think will be most happy, content with their achievements over the last 7 weeks? Because that's not hard to pick. As you said already, Steve, everyone would be slightly regretful. Johnny?
France, maybe?
you were dying to say Italy then, Johnny.
I don't know. Ireland bombed in that first game, Scotland against England, Wales. Yeah, you know, Wales couldn't do it, get it over the line against England. England then couldn't do it against Ireland. I don't know. It's a tough one to answer. I think that, I mean, with France, obviously they have shown a little bit of promise this year. They kind of stabilised things a little bit, but then they've kind of got that charade of what they had at the end of that Wales game. So that's going to be a bit of dark cloud looming over them. I think with Scotland, they're obviously, I think they've got the greatest potential, obviously, with Vern Cotter now having finished and Gregor Townsend coming in for next year. I think, all the talk this year was about, yes, they're going to do it for Vern this year, they're going to do this, do that. Didn't manage it. Now the talk's going to be they're going to do it for Gregor next year. So I guess they're the ones who have kind of really got their, going to have their hearts on their sleeves and everything for the next year's campaign, and they've got to match it with their performances as well and actually threaten for the title instead of just kind of talking about it, really.
Steve, do you think anyone's actually happy?
Look, the thing is, no one's happy because the good thing was, from the spectator's point of view, that as some team would rise up, then get their head chopped off, and then the winning team would lose the next game. That was good. Look, if in a bad in a season where you didn't go as high as you wanted to, you may as well be the team that won the trophy, and England retained the trophy. We know there's no Grand Slam, nowhere remotely near it, but if you're in that situation, you might as well come away with something, and they did.
Mm. Yeah, no one happy, as I said earlier. Mm. I mean, I put a tweet out on Saturday night saying I still wasn't sure who the best team was in that tournament, and it got a lot of stick. I mean, is that a more relevant question?
No, I got absolutely hammered on Twitter on Saturday night. I said in review, England were really good in one game out of five, and apparently that was just, you know.
No, but that's true.
I didn't deserve to live after that.
That's true. I mean, who is the best team? Seriously.
The best individual performance was Ireland on Sunday. They also gave a couple of, you know, when they were overpowered by Wales, when they weren't playing too bad.
But having said that, I mean, if Hench had known the laws, they'd have beaten Wales, wouldn't they?
Yeah,
because they would have gone. They would have gone over there. They'd have been in front.
So many ifs. If Jonathan Davis had kicked into touch,
well, exactly. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Highlights of the weekend. I'll kick off on the Friday night of the weekend. I went to the England under-20s game against Ireland under-20s to see whether the England juniors did complete their Grand Slam.
All right. Your expenses will come through. We know you went.
Thank you for that. It was a very long way away, and I had to get a flight and an expensive meal. Aside from that, I had one of those moments where you see a young player and you think, blimey, that is someone we're going to be talking about in years to come. The Ireland fullback, a kid called Jordan Lama. Watch out for him in the future. You will see him playing for Ireland in the next 5 years.
Okay. Is that L-A, like a llama in the zoo, or L-A-M-A, or what?
L-A-R-M-O-U-R.
Oh, Lamo, Lamour. Okay.
Pronunciation, we can work that out later.
Okay, fine. Okay.
Johnny?
I thought that, I guess, my highlight of the weekend would be watching Sexton get absolutely Mullered and getting back up again. But I'm not saying it's good that he got mullered every single time and all the tackles came flying in for him. I'm saying it's good that he actually got back up and didn't give it all the back chat that we're so used to with him. I think he proved a point in that game.
Brilliant. I completely agree.
And the no back chat, no edge from him, I think that's now, for me, he's definitely now the Lions 10. After seeing him do that,
I enjoyed the final whistle of the Ireland England game because you say it was all over for a bit. We can get our lives back, but I just thought it was great Six Nations, and I think my most comforting moment was when we touched down at Heathrow after a dramatic battle against 75 mile an hour winds. we tried to go down on three runways, went round eight times. Came down safely, but that magnificent British Airways captain. So well done, son, because that was shaky.
J-Mo.
No, I absolutely love that Wales France extra time business. I mean, it was chaotic, but just watching it, I mean, you couldn't quite believe what was going on. The one point I'd make is I think referee Wayne Byrnes was totally blameless. I thought he did brilliantly. I mean, he was a ridiculous set of circumstances was thrust upon him, and I thought he did a decent job in the circumstances. I mean, it just was incredible viewing. You just saw, you know, when the bite thing comes, you know, the HIA, whatever you think about that, then Thomas Francis, was he injured or was it a tactical substitution? I mean, you couldn't believe it, and I was thinking, I want to watch Ireland England here. You know, you've got to get on with it. I mean, they'll have to look at that in future, won't they? And maybe just leave a bit longer between the second.
It was extraordinary sitting in the Aviva Stadium hearing an announcement we're delaying the start of the game while we wait for Wales to finally finish.
I tell you what, the only very, very worrying thing is, I agree with Steve about Wayne Barnes. I think Wayne got them all right, with one exception possibly, and that was the touch judge said that there was not 10 yards for a.
Oh, yeah, I went pick him, I took the quick tap.
Yeah, and I think that they were. I don't think churches should shout anything unless they're sure. What worries me is a lot of it has now been handed on to the Six Nations Committee. That lot who messed up the Marla thing, totally messed it up. There's already a bite mark in George North's arm, and there's no bite. Now they're going to sit down on the what you said this morning in the paper is a worse incident than Bloodgate, and I got no confidence in that lot to come up with anything remotely like the right decision.
The thing about that HIA and the dodgy substitution is, it's phenomenally hard to see how you can police that. It just requires the integrity of people to.
Yeah, but I mean, what could Barnes do?
Barnes could do nothing.
When the doctor came on, he couldn't say no. He's staying on. Imagine if next scrummage he collapses.
But doesn't have to be verified by an independent doctor anyway. So it's.
But he gets independently verified when he's gone down the tunnel for his HIA. So the decision to take him off was by the French doctor. Mm.
Do you know what the only reason we have replacements now, or the only reason we have so many, is that when you had to get the doctors okay to come off, the doctors were bent because they became team doctors and they totally forgot all their oaths. Mm. And this fool coming in now, Dr. Kildare's French cousin running on the pitch, he's become as much a part of the team as the coach and the bloke who sweeps the dressing rooms out.
Okay, we're finishing our Six Nations in disarray and unhappiness. Our team in the tournament has been picked this week by Steve James,
and
no one is allowed to agree with him. James, off you go.
Okay, we'll start at number 15. I've picked Stuart Hogg, but I'm not.
You were anti-Hoggy last time we saw you.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm not entirely sure about it. But
I've gone in and out of that one as well, but I finished with him too.
He attacked well, defended very poorly, but I just think the others haven't mounted enough of a challenge to take him out of that place. Please discuss.
Hog for me.
Johnny's in.
Absolutely. I'm in. And obviously, Steve absolutely loves
Stuart Hogg. Has not been Stuart Hogg's fan during the Six Nations.
You didn't even pick him for your Lions.
He scores 27 tries and he's not in.
Look, what's it? Didn't pick him for your Lions squad. Has anyone ever seen a match in New Zealand? That's why I didn't pick him. I get all these. You say the attack by Twitter. This is like being savaged by a dead sheep.
Who are you going to pick? Who are you going to pick?
I'm going to pick Scott Spedding.
Yeah, but even France dropped him.
Sorry?
Even France dropped him.
I picked him on
that one performance against England.
No, yeah. He had a couple of good games.
He was good against England, I'll give you that. But
Scotland game is good as well, actually.
Wingers have gone for Tommy Seymour and Elliot Daly.
The first half on Saturday, the chickens all came home to roost, didn't they? He didn't know where
I thought
he was.
Showed some touches of class, though, and he got a bit more involved than Anthony Watson did.
He had composure, I thought.
And when he caught the ball just as it was going out, but flicked it back in, didn't he? Jumped up, flicked it back in, then booted it away, I thought. Daly would be in my team, and so George North.
Okay, sorry.
George North. You can't pick George North after that Scotland game, though. That just discounts him.
I just think that he finally turned up. After being missing for
He'll be in the Lions side, but
for the last 18 months or so, he's finally turned up.
I just have a problem with George North. I thought he got better and obviously rediscovered his form against Ireland. But Ireland stuck a few high balls over his head, and he was pretty rubbish underneath them. And the All Blacks will see that and think, oh, that's brilliant, won't they?
Yeah, he played well against the All Blacks' first Test mine last summer. And I think that you need at least one big winger. I mean, New Zealand will have at least one big winger, maybe two.
No, you need at least two big wingers.
Okay, well, there we go.
You need three big people in the back three.
So that's why you have to pick Northern.
Yeah. All right, our centres.
All right. Okay, centres. Farrell, shoo-in. You can't argue with that.
Broad agreement there. Right. Mm-hmm. Everyone, yes?
I've gone with Joseph at 13, even though I've got big reservations there as well. I think he's a good front foot player, but I think he went missing in Dublin. And I've never been a big fan of Gary Ringrose, but I thought he was excellent in Dublin on Saturday.
I went for Joseph as well, but like you say, Ringrose in Dublin. There's obviously all the talk. He's the next Brian O'Driscoll. You've seen bits of it, but he's never He's a young player.
I had Fiku as my 13.
Fiku
is mine too, and Farrell. The one person disappointing me was Henshaw, because I looked at him very, very closely a few times, and I found him very one-dimensional.
10, Sexton.
Agreed.
Agree. 9, wasn't sure about it, if I'm honest.
This is a good one.
I've gone with Webb, Reece Webb, Wales.
Is there anyone in your three guys' team who's ever made a tackle?
Reece Webb makes lots of tackles.
Oh, all right, Reece Webb. Okay.
Is Conor Murray not a good tackler? The thing about Reece Webb is he gives away penalties, isn't he? And Irish people don't know how to give away penalties, so that's sort of...
I like the French come off as well. What's his name?
Sarah.
I think he's classy. Loosehead, I've gone with Joe Marler.
Me too.
Even though I think Marco Vanipola's better, but he was obviously injured and only came back in late. And I'd have Vanipola as my Lions loosehead, but I've gone with Marler.
Also Marler, written down here for me.
So, yeah, fair enough.
Okay.
At least you got one defender in the team.
Okay, as I mentioned earlier, I've gone with Ken Owens. Again,
I suspect your front row has got across the board agreement. Have you gone Marla Owens Furlong?
Furlong, yes.
That's what I've got.
No, Ken Owens is. They will have to have finishers, as Eddie calls them. Ken is you need someone to finger them in the scrum. You've got to have the biggest guy there. I don't know. I mean,
so who's that then? Hartley.
George.
Is he that big?
George. Well, he's bigger than Ken. I mean, Ken is...
He's never started a test, has he?
Ken's one of the guys...
No, he's got the record as well,
if Ken Owens was two stone bigger, he'd be one of the greatest forwards. And also, you ask anyone from Gloucester about Richard Hibbard this year and tell me why he's not in the Welsh team.
This is the weekly Hibbard supporters club.
No, it's not. You ask...
I'm not disputing it, but...
You ask anyone at Gloucester, he's absolutely fantastic.
I agree that Jamie George should be the starter in the test matches, but we're talking about the team of the tournament, and he's played 25 minutes, so I also have Owens. Okay. Right, our locks are?
The English locks, Launch, Brian Laws.
I went all English as well, actually.
Okay, well, I had Launch, Brian Laws as well.
Back row, 6 and 7 have gone with the Welsh boys, Warburton and Tipperick. I've not been a big fan of Tipperick in the past, but I thought he had a very good tournament. I think he'll go on the Lions tour, but I think Warburton will be the Lions 7 and he'll be captain.
And you're 8?
I've gone with Pickhamoles at 8.
I've gone Pickhamoles at 8. I put Warburton at 6, and I just couldn't decide between Tipperick and Frenchman Kevin Gordon. I thought he had a great championship as well.
Okay.
I put Standard in there for me.
At 6?
Yeah. Standard's interesting for the Lions, isn't he? I mean, he had a great championship. As Steve continually points out, and I watched him on Saturday and I could not agree more, he has a dimension and not many more than that one.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing I'd say, Sam Warburton himself will admit he's not a great carrier. That's why I don't think they'll consider Warburton at six for the Lions. I think they will need a carrier at six. And Stander is a carrier, but so is O'Brien. I wouldn't rule O'Brien out at six.
Where Ireland struggled was they had both those guys in the back row. They're fantastic, big-hearted players, but both of them really restrict you.
Yeah.
Okay. Gents, Six Nations is done. We're now moving back into the week-by-week Premiership and European Club Rugby. So we'll just finish off this podcast talking about that. In particular, the news from Leicester yesterday about their change of coach, head coach. Aaron Major is going to be coach for Leicester on Saturday for the Northampton game, and then he will be on a plane back to New Zealand, and Matt O'Connor will replace him. The Leicester players have been extraordinarily firm in their surprise that they prepared to vocalise in their support of Major. For me, it seems extraordinary that you spend 2 years building a team around Aaron Major and recruiting major players, and then you bring someone else in to coach them. Is this a positive move?
The players clearly don't think it is. Freddie Burns, Talisa Vianu, Lachlan McCafferty. Was there anyone else? I can't remember if there was anyone else. They all kind of said, what's going on? You know, we're going in the right direction. Major's been brilliant, a breath of fresh air, the best training they've ever had at Tigers, a lot of them saying, and then all of a sudden he gets the bullet. And it's always hilarious that this worldwide search that Leicester have been doing is ended up with a free agent who's been at the club before. It was it's remarkable. It was like Harlequins when they had this worldwide search. We're going to scour the globe for the best man for the job. And then it turns out he's on our doorstep. And it's called John Kingston.
Three phone numbers in their phone.
He's in the next room. Unbelievable. I'm staggered by it. And when you see the Leicester fans, in their hordes attacking it, absolutely furious. Well, I hope they've done the right thing. It's very, very, very odd indeed for me.
What is Major's record since Cockle left? I mean, they won a trophy on Sunday for a start. Hasn't he won?
Hasn't been great, though, has it? It took him four games at least to get a win, was it?
Did it, okay.
Yeah, but I think, Johnny, they are on the verge of the last four, aren't they?
They're fifth at the moment. Bath are going backwards.
That game at Twickenham is going to be a huge game, isn't it?
Yeah. The dismissal of Aaron Major has been so lacking in grace. As they're playing at Northampton, they've probably got him a taxi to East Midlands Airport to buzz off straight away.
I think they'll put in a massive performance for him this weekend.
Yeah, definitely.
I think they'll win that.
Well, they usually do in those games, don't they?
Yeah.
Gentlemen, thank you very, very much indeed. That was The Ruck. Thank you for listening, and we'll be back again next week.